Hey everybody, today I watched part 6 of the 1995 David Fincher film, Seven. This covers minutes 35, it starts at the 35 minute mark and goes through the 42 minute mark. It's a third of the way through the film. So much more to happen, I'm sure. We've just got just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. This segment begins in the middle of the conversation that the last segment ended with between Somerset and Tracy. And she sees Somerset's gun as he takes off his jackets, and she says she can't get used to guns. And he says, I can't either. Something like that. And so they get down to dinner. On their record player is the song Straight No Chaser, which is a jazz standard that was written by Thelonious Monk in 1951. Now, the X-ray notes did not say who's playing the version that's in the film. I will probably find out by watching the credits. But I'm not going to do that at the moment. If I had to guess, I think it's very likely that it's Miles Davis from his album Miles Tones, since that is the most well-known recording of this piece of music. Alright, so during dinner, Tracy asks Somerset, why aren't you married? He says that most people who spend any time with him find him disagreeable, and he also says that he's lived in the city too long. It's after this that we find out the quirk of the Mills home, which is the subway, when it passes, just shakes the entire building. Probably ruins some records. I think they should upgrade. Well, it's not really an upgrade, necessarily, but they should get some CD players, because those won't... I mean, I don't think they had skip protection back in 1995. I don't know if they had it yet. They probably did. So it might have still been in just as much of danger of messing up the music, but there would be no physical damage to the disc. Which made me a little bit nervous seeing the needle jump around on top of the record there. Okay, so that quote, that real estate guy, he only ever brought them in for 5 minutes at a time, so they wouldn't know about the subway. I love that detail. That's one of the details of this movie that I've remembered. And it's because my brother-in-law would reference it with their previous home, which is nearly under the flight path of a nearby airport. It didn't happen as often as this subway, but every now and then, a plane approaching that airport from the south would fly over their housing development. So after dinner, Mills and Somerset get to talking about the case. They hypothesize how they would have gotten into the office. Now this is for the Gould case, the Gould murder. And since they are talking about this, I guess there wasn't another murder on that day. I'm not sure exactly what, we don't know exactly what he was doing when he left, wherever he was leaving, in the rain, and then got those cliff notes. They see that there's a scale that has exactly a pound of flesh, and Gould has been bound. He has one arm bound, and then the other had a butcher's knife. one of the quotes from, oh, I should have written down what the quote was from, but his task was done, he would go free. So that it's pretty apparent that he's being tortured in a way, that he's forced to do this to himself. And in a way, that's kind of like what the Saw movies, a little bit. Anyway, he... they think about if they had to do that, which body part would be the most dispensable, and they figure, oh, love handles. And that's exactly the part that Gould cut off. So Somerset talks about part of his process is to kind of filter out the murder, filter out the grotesque part of it, not in these exact words or anything, and just find one detail and focus on that. And he says, find one detail until it's an exhausted possibility. It's at this point that Mills offers him a beer, and he asks for wine instead. They hypothesize that whoever's doing this is preaching, and Mills gets talking about how Dante and his friend were climbing the hill, and that in that telling of the sins, that pride comes first, not gluttony. Now, is this going to be important? Possibly. He doesn't say anything about the order beyond that. So, I don't know. If he is going in the order of Dante's Inferno, was there a murder that happened previous to the gluttony murder that they just don't know about? Or is the order just arbitrary anyway? I'm sure we'll find out by the end of this thing. Somerset describes this as forced attrition, that it's kind of feeling bad for your sins, but because somebody's making you feel bad for it, not because of your own personal beliefs, or something like that. The crime scene is clean of fingerprints, and there's no connection between these victims. There's really nothing to go off of except for the circled eyes of Gould's wife. I'm not sure if it's a painting or if it's a photograph, but on the wall in the spray, no, is it? It's blood, isn't it? It's either blood or paint, I don't know. She has circles around her eyes, and this could either mean she did see something or she should be seeing something. That's may be the key to figuring this whole thing out. She was out of town at the time of the murder, and so that could be significant. And there's just any number of possibilities of why this detail could be important. And going back to what Somerset said, focus on it until it's an exhausted possibility. They bid farewell to each other. Somerset leaves for the night. Mills wants to get some sleep. But the next shot we see Tracy asleep in bed. No sign of Mills. She wakes up and she starts walking through the apartment looking for her husband. And that's where this segment ends. I would imagine he's probably still up late studying the photographs of all the evidence of the crime scene, maybe reading up more on the Cliff Notes. We'll find out in the next segment. I'm pretty certain we will. So that's it for minute marker 35 through 42 of 7. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let me know what you thought about it by tweeting me at jkire, that's J-K-I-R-E. And be sure to visit todayiwatched.com for more reviews all the time. I'll be back tomorrow with part 7 of 7.